Welcome back. We have a wonderful 2 hours ahead for you. We're going to take another trip with Admiral Cooper. We're going back to Europe and do the second half of his just recently completed patrol over there, which he took a group, and they had a fabulous time, and you can go next time if you'd like, and we hope you'll all consider doing that while it's still there, and there's still time. Harry knows how to work this. He knows where to take people, and he always gets them into places that the ordinary folks just don't get into. Welcome back, sir. How are you?
Good evening. I'm staying alive.
Yeah, that's in these times, I'll take it. It's not fun. It's not easy. And I think of all the people listening who are really having it tough. I'm having it tough. But some people are just, they're wonderful people, and they have been so beaten and so abused by these international gangsters who are trying to take this country into the toilet.
Yeah, they're doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we threw off a tyranny once, and we may get to the point quite soon. If they try to take our guns, we cannot allow that. Can't allow
it. Oh, agreed. And I can't imagine how anybody can think they can scoop up, 300 million guns in the U.S.? You know, if Obama is saying they can't find 10 million illegal aliens to throw them out, how are you going to find 300 million guns?
Well, it's actually 30 or 40 or 50 million illegals here now. Bringing in 20,000. Leonard Colwell said 20,000 a day. Some phenomenal number.
To dilute the Americans and to help bankrupt us because they come in here and immediately they head for welfare.
That's it. And they'll never work. Why should they? They don't have to. They get everything paid for.
You and I are paying their way, sure.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, well, we know.
They had to have a sponsor and they had to get a job.
That's right. That's right.
100 years ago.
Okay. We're going to talk about a lot of things tonight, but most importantly is that all of you do your part, register to vote, and vote. And that I know a lot of the system is rigged. Don't let that stop you. Look for irregularities at the polls. Stand on your constitutional rights. You must. Hillary Clinton, Obama, they're just sock puppets. They're figureheads for the real killers. Soros, he's still a front man. There are people behind Soros. This is an orchestrated, engineered destruction and death of the United States of America. And Europe is going through the same thing right now that's planned for us. We just spent another hour on that. All right. Now, please go to Rents at the left side. You'll find guests. Click under Harry Cooper's name on the photos link and load them up, because we're going to go and have a lot of fun. You can go to sharkhunters.com anytime you'd like and look up tours and go back in time and take trip after trip after trip. It's just great. Talk about vicarious thrills and entertainment and education. You learn history as it really happened. This is the real deal. And Harry really should have at least one or two PhDs by now. The contributions he's made, the knowledge you have, come on. You know more about history than probably most PhDs do.
Well,
not all
particular history, because I do it 12 hours a day.
That's right.
I was very fortunate. I started Shark Hunters 33 years ago, and I was able to meet and become friends with so many of the U-boat veterans, U-boat skippers like Otto Kretschmer.
Just amazing.
Yeah, and I had a sleeping room in his house, and Reinhard Hardagen, I've been friends with him since 1985. The man is still alive, and if he makes it to this March, he'll be 104, and he still drives his Mercedes down to
Oregon. Well, bless that. What a wonderful thing. Wow.
Tough guy.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, those men of steel, men of all countries and armies, of course, stood tall, but none taller as a group than the German military. And there were probably up to 500,000 Jews in the German military at one time or another during the war years. Don't forget that.
Oh, sure.
And people don't know that. So, because they were patriots.
There was a member of Shark Hunters, Helmut Schmuckel, who's half Jewish. He was commander of a German U-boat.
There you go. Wow. All right. In our last 2 hour visit on last Friday. We had fun. We went to Oktoberfest, and we got to see some things that are fascinating history. And we're going to go tonight and look at some things that are even more intriguing. So get those pictures loaded up, and let's get ready to take off. Any announcements you want to make before we do that?
Yeah, a couple of them. First off, anybody who contacts us either by email or by phone and wants to sign up for membership, the first year is half off if they say they listen to us on Rents Radio.
Also, great.
We're getting our tours planned for next year. Our first one is going to be North Germany and Berlin, where we'll be visiting U-995, the only Type 7C submarine left in the world. They built about, I think, 800 of these things, and there's only one left in the world.
Wow.
And my best friend in Germany, Hans-Georg Hess, was the last skipper of this boat. We visit U-2540, the only Type 21 submarine, the electro boat, still in the world. We'll visit Wewelsburg Castle, which is...
Yes.
Heinrich Himmler was going to reinstate the Knights of the Teutonic Order there. Then a lot of other things in Berlin as well. Then the next 2 weeks we'll be in South Germany and Austria, and you'll see a lot of the things on your show tonight that we're going to see. And we also will be going to Ulrichsburg Fest.
Oh, good.
Which is, yeah, up on, well, I don't know if it'll be on the mountain anymore because the mountain is starting to implode a little bit, but it's a memorial hosted pretty much by, well, there's a lot of people there from the 5th SS, and they remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what flag flew over them, no matter what uniform they wore. Mm-hmm. Anyone who fell in battle, they respect them, and they have a memorial service that is really incredible.
And that's part of that German military honor that they carried with them all the way through World War One, World War Two. It's just part of the culture, and it was unusual, unique, completely unique. Yeah. All right, this is amazing. 800 Type 7 U-boats were built, approximately 800, give or take. Most of them are at the bottom of the ocean, I guess, those that weren't scrapped.
Yeah, unfortunately, at the end of the war, the last full year of the war at least, they had only one chance in 10 of returning from their maiden voyage. Nine out of 10 were sunk on their first time out. Well, we had broken the codes in May of 1943. They called it Black May, because Germany lost as many submarines that month alone as the U.S. Navy did through combat in the whole war. They lost, I think it was 48 submarines that month, whereas the U.S. Navy lost 52 in the entire war, and not all through combat. There were four or five.
Atlantic and Pacific losses all together?
Right. 52 with 3,505 men aboard. That's what the U.S. Navy lost. Mm-hmm. And I think four or five of them were accidents or crashing into their own escort, etc. So the U.S. lost 52 in the whole war. Germany lost 48 in that 1 month alone.
Didn't anybody I've never been able to figure this out. Were they so supremely confident in their codes and their machine, that wonderful, the Enigma machine that they had, that they just couldn't conceive of anybody having cracked it and they just wouldn't go there? Why didn't they figure it out? Why didn't they change the base code just as a matter of routine? I don't get it.
Well, even early on when Otto Kretschmer was still at sea, and remember, he was knocked out of the war in March of 1941 before the U.S. even got into the war. He refused to answer Dönitz, Admiral, he was Captain Dönitz at the time.
Uh-huh.
He insisted on the submarines having conversations with him back and forth. And Kretschmer just refused, and Kretschmer told me that after one patrol, Dönitz called him aside and was about to chew him out. And you're under orders, you have to answer, and Kretschmer said words to the effect that I'm under orders to protect my submarine and my men, and he said, I know they can spot us from the radio. And the few times when Admiral Dönitz would bring it up to military high command, the OKW, Oberkommandeur Wehrmacht, they laughed him away because there were so many billion combinations of the code.
Uh-huh.
But then, as we read in last month's magazine issue, you know, we mm-hmm. publish a magazine. Mm-hmm. Your listeners can
a wonderful magazine.
Yeah, thank you. They can email us and say they want a free copy, and I'll send them a copy of last month's issue. And one of our members, Commander Charles, I've gone blank and got 8,000 and something members. Anyhow, he wrote quite an impressive article on the Enigma. And certain things made it easier to track. In other words, if the letter L equaled M in this transmission, then
right.
M equaled L also, so that took the possibilities down a chunk.
I see.
So, yeah, Gunderson, Charles Gunderson, Commander uh-huh. Charles Gunderson, uh-huh. he wrote a really nice article on that. And then there were.
Well, if you want, I'll be happy to post that on my site and point it or put it up on your site. Give me a link, and I'll link to it.
Okay,
I love things like
that. Out tomorrow,
yeah.
Because after our show tonight, I'm going to go look at the inside of my eyelids for a while.
Yeah, well, you work awfully hard. I know.
Yeah, I've been in the office since 4 this morning. So if I start to sound a little stupid, it's not because I'm drunk or
not a problem. Not to worry. I get that way. To start babbling sometimes too. All right, let's go and take a look at our pictures here, our photos from the European Patrol Part 2, and scroll down and see what's number. I never look at these in advance. I try not to anyway. And you can see more than we have actually put up here. Harry's got more under tours. The so many photographs. By the way, what kind of camera do you use? People want to know. Inquiring minds want to know.
A cheap little camera that it's. I'm looking at it here. It's about 2 inches high by about 3 inches long and 3/4 of an inch wide. It's a Samsung. It cost me $100 at Walmart a couple of years ago. It just takes great photos.
It sure does. Well, good for you. That's all you need. You don't need some $2,000 thing with changeable lenses, for goodness sakes. And I guess it's much better than most smartphone cameras are just so-so, I understand. They're okay, but they're not like a camera. A camera is a camera.
Yeah, and I don't even own a smartphone because you got to be smart to operate a smartphone.
I can't handle them either. Nope.
Yeah, so, and this little camera... I don't have to worry about settings or anything like that. I just point it and push the button and I get it.
See, that's the kind of camera that puts it, when they say point and shoot, you're supposed to be able to point and shoot. Not look at two knobs and three different sets of little switches you push and rotate a screen around. And No, you just point and shoot. I don't know why people can't figure that out.
I've got a $1,000 Nikon, which I rarely even bring with me anymore because it's just too cumbersome. A big thing hanging around your neck. It takes incredible photos, ultra high resolution, but it's a pain in the butt.
Well, it's hard to hug the girls too when you got a big camera around your neck.
That's true too. And this little one, I just stick it.
Just kidding. All right.
Well, my wife's sleeping now, anyhow.
Oh, all right. Okay. All right, we got a little green car here in the first picture, a tribute to Soviet engineering.
Right, this has absolutely nothing to do with our tour, but when we were on our way out this morning, we stopped, you know, we always stop for food, and this thing was in the parking lot. It's called a Trabant, and it was designed and built in, I think it was in East Germany, when that was the Soviet bloc, and from what I understand, the engine has only 7 or 9 moving parts in the whole motor. So now they've got a club, the Trabant Club. That's the Trabant Club of Bavaria that was on the back of his window. And so we just took a shot of that because it's really rare. Little cracker boxes that only the wealthy could afford.
Well, some kind of a revolutionary engine design, like the Germans would do. And how interesting.
Yeah, when we were in Berlin last time, there was a whole parade of these things came by. It was their club, the Trabant Club of Berlin. That was the one.
Funny.
So, then we went to, now we're doing more bunkers and tunnels and stuff on this part of the tour. Last time it was a lot of historic places, but also Oktoberfest and Folkfest.
It was a social outing.
Right. It was a lot of fun. Jeez, it was a lot of fun. Oktoberfest. And we find that if you go in the morning, you're not tripping over so many people. We got a parking space only 100 meters away from the main gate. Normally, you're lucky. Last year when we were there, we had to park several miles out and then take the train in.
Well, most people don't drink beer before 7 a.m., do they?
I don't drink beer at all.
I know you don't.
but some of our people, if there's a beer, they're going to drink it.
That's
so
funny.
God bless them. Germany's got some of the best beer in the world.
Yeah.
And why not enjoy it?
Absolutely. All right. What's our sign here, our second sign?
Oh, that sign there.
Unbeflugen? East Das.
Basically, it translates to shark hunters are welcome here.
I figured. Mm-hmm.
These are the coal bunkers. You skip to the next picture. And
where are we now, Harry? Where are we?
This is on the mountain called the Obersalzberg.
Ah, this is, yeah.
This is right near where Hitler had his home and Goering and
kind of like Valhalla of the German leadership.
Something like that. And, you know, they have winters there, heavy winters. And there's a road above this and then a road down that we're standing on, a driveway. And the trucks would go along on the road above and dump their coal into, I think there were 8 of these little bunker things. They dumped their coal in there, and then when somebody would need coal for their house, their office, whatever, this was all a security zone, the Reichssicherheit zone, they would back a truck in there and pull the handle and let the coal run down into the truck, and then they'd go deliver it to the home. People, a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, wonder what the heck, coal and home? Well, I'm old enough to remember that when I lived in Chicago as a little kid, we had coal heat. And every morning I had to get up and shake the grates on the furnace, and then I had to shovel more coal into the furnace.
Hmm.
And when my son, God rest him, didn't make it to 21 years old, when he was a little kid, I told him, if he's naughty, Santa Claus is going to leave garbage and coal in your in your stocking. And he looked at me and he says, Daddy, what's coal? It's kind of like a black rock that burns.
Yeah. You know, they found some amazing things in coal deposits, in coal mines. I mean, we're talking deep mines in coal, bituminous coal that's been coal for millions, tens of millions of years.
Right.
They have found in coal such things as, and there are photographs of them, a delicately little wrist, a bracelet made of gold links.
Wow.
Ancient things. Tens of millions of years ago, this planet was inhabited. And these little pieces of stuff are locked up in deposits of rock, shale, coal, all kinds of things. Hidden History of the Human Race, Michael Cremo, C-R-E-M-O, wrote the book on it, and the pictures of all these things.
Scientists, I've read, many years ago, scientists believe that civilization is on the third or fourth time around.
Oh, I agree.
On the Earth.
Totally agree.
But we're not going to see much more in coal mines anyhow, because Hillary is going to shut down the coal mines and put all the coal miners out of work.
Yeah. Well, we need to shut Hillary down. And
lock her up. Lock her up.
Yeah, that's all right. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, the next picture is actually looking inside one of those bunkers.
Uh-huh.
And they're all empty now. But at the back of the 8th bunker, allegedly there was a door that led into the tunnel system. And so the powers that be bulldozed debris up over the door of the 8th bunker. So a couple of years ago, I climbed up over the top of it and snuck on through there and got down inside. And doggone, they're right. There is a door that leads into the bunker and tunnel system. But
really,
they welded it shut. You're not supposed to go in that.
Well, there's some amazing things in that mountain.
Oh, boy. not only there, but every place the Third Reich touched, pretty much. They built tunnels, bunkers.
There may be 88s in there, and aircraft weapons that they had on reserve that are forgotten, locked away, welded away. It could be anything in there.
Yeah, this is true. If it was not found by the victors during, you know, after World War II, because if the victors found weapons and stuff in there, they usually took them away
for whatever reason to use them
to study them, whatever. But there are a bunch of bunkers and tunnels that had not been found until recently.
Right.
Our friend Jeff Carson, who you'll see later on, he gave us a tour up on the Obersalzberg also, and this guy is the most knowledgeable guy, I think, in the world on the construction done by the Third Reich. If they build a building, if they build a factory, if they dug a tunnel, this guy knows where it's at, and he's been to a lot of them.
Really? And he's an American?
Nope, he's a Brit.
Okay, Jeff Carson.
Yeah, Brit living in Germany now.
Wow. All right. Well, you've mentioned him before. I remember the name. I thought for some reason with a name like that, he might be an American.
Nah, we call him the Tunnel King.
Yeah. Yeah. Say that in German. next program. Okay.
Yeah, next program. Bunker König, I guess.
That's
I don't
it.
Know.
All right. No, oh, there, look, there's Cooper knocking on the door. That's not the one that's welded shut, though. That's another one.
Well, this is another door that leads into that same tunnel complex, only if you look down on the door in front of my tummy there, there's a lock on that door.
Okay.
The powers that be in that area have a key to it, and they can go in and out whenever they want, but there's another big tunnel.
Looks like a wooden door. Harry, is that a wooden door, Harry?
No, it looks that way, but it's steel.
Well, I think you need to bring a little device that'll saw through that lock.
Yeah, they take a dim view of that over there, and they got some unpleasant prisons, I've been told. But anyhow, there's a town nearby called Hallein, just over the border into Austria, and there's a huge bunker and tunnel system under there, but it's locked up. So I wrote to the proper authorities and told them I was a historian, and asked for permission to go in there. Oh, no, they said it's unsafe. That's their stock answer. It's unsafe.
Yeah, right.
That just means we don't want you to see it.
No. Might do bad things to your mind.
I know. Like if you see a swastika, your brain will melt.
That's true.
And you give money to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
No, God. All right. You may be sleepy, but you're still funny.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. This is the Eagle's Nest entry.
Right. You take a bus up an incredibly steep mountain path, a bus driven by probably a former kamikaze pilot, because he's going up there at breakneck speed, and some of these turns are right back on each other and through tunnels with only 2 or 3 inches to spare, and you get to the top. And then you go through this tunnel.
In the bus? No, you walk.
No, the bus lets you off right about where I was standing to take the picture.
Got it.
Then you walk down this tunnel, which is probably 150 feet long, something like that. This is the tunnel that they all walked through back in 1939, 1940, whatever. This is the tunnel that all the leaders of the Reich walked through, the same exact tunnel.
Wow. Fascinating.
And you see the gateway first, the entrance, and then the next photo is in the tunnel itself. Mm-hmm. It's hard taking pictures in there because it's low light level, but, you know, they built stuff to last. The tunnel's in the same shape as it was the day they opened
it. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And German your little point-and-shoot camera has no flash on it, but it sure takes good pictures.
Yeah, well, it has a flash if it decides to use a flash. And the way I control whether the flash is on or not, I stick my finger over the flash in case it's too bright. Yeah,
perfect.
That way I don't get backscatter.
Yankee ingenuity. All right. Are these the same? Could they be the same overhead lights?
They're old. I don't know if they're the same ones, but they're old. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know.
So we walk through the tunnel, which will be there, you know, probably till the end of time.
Eons from now.
Yeah. So we go ahead through the tunnel, and what happens?
And the next two pictures, you're in the elevator, because you go another 400 and something meters straight up in the elevator.
400 meters, not 150 feet. 400 meters up.
I think that's what they say, yeah. Oh, when you're at the top, you're about a mile in the sky, literally.
Wow.
And then you see the two pictures of inside the elevator with the highly polished brass, bronze, copper, whatever you call it, the walls there.
So, now, did you say Borman designed this whole thing? Was this his deal?
Borman was in charge of the construction. It was for Hitler's 50th birthday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So they busted their tail getting it all done. There were a few people killed, unfortunately, but, you know, unlike the propaganda stories that it was all slave laborers, some poor guy taken off the farm or out of the ghetto and forced to dig tunnels. No, this takes highly skilled stonemasons.
You bet. Now, this woman with a little dog on the left. Now, what's behind her, that round item? That's against the wall. I can see her reflection in it.
It's just an
ornament?
Decorations, I guess, in there. And they jam about a zillion people into the elevator. And
now, this is the same elevator.
It is the exact same elevator.
If it could only talk.
Yeah. And the benches are still in them. I suppose they've been reupholstered, but they're folded up against the wall because they don't want people relaxing and sitting. They want four times as many people crammed in there because it's about $25 roughly per person, and that gets you the ride up in the bus and up in the elevator, and they put at least 20, maybe 30 people into that elevator.
So this elevator is what? 15 by... 20, something like that. Big elevator.
Probably 15 square, I guess. Pretty big. Mm-hmm. And it makes the trip every minute, up and down.
And one elevator.
Up and down, yep. And you figure if they put 20 people on at $25 a head, you do the math, every 1 minute times how many minutes. There's a lot of people going up there. Plus, when you get up there, of course, you're going to have something to eat because it's all been turned into a restaurant now.
Of course.
And there's a snack bar. So you figure every person probably on average is going to spend $50 to $75 Yankee money and multiply that by the number of people that go up and down the hill. That's why, in my opinion, that's why the Eagle's Nest was never destroyed. They decided it was not Nazi. Everything else on the mountain was Nazi, so they destroyed it. And on the Obersalzberg also, Hitler's home, Goering's home, et cetera, et cetera. But this is making so damn much money. Oh, no, this, you can give it special dispensation. It's not Nazi. They're making a fortune on this place.
Look at the views. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll scroll up to the next one. Well, you see where it says Kelstein House.
Yeah.
I don't know who it was called it the Eagle's Nest, but that was an Allied idea. It's always been the Kelstein House, which means the house on Kelstein Mountain. But then you look again, you can the next picture, you see the village of Berchtesgaden way down in that valley. And no matter where you're at in that area, if you're in Berchtesgaden, if you're in Königssee, if you're in any of the surrounding areas, you look up at Kelstein Mountain, and there's the Eagle's Nest. No matter where you're at, you can see it. And from up on top at the Eagle's Nest, you can see everything up there. And at night, they got a brilliant white light, and then the locals say, well, Uncle Audie is watching you.
Yeah, if you get up that high, I guess you can almost see Florida from there.
Well, you can. I didn't get a picture of it this time, but you can see Salzburg. Remember, this is in Germany. Salzburg is in Austria.
Yeah.
But you can see the village of the city of Salzburg, and you can see the castle from up here without binoculars.
Wow. Amazing country.
Yeah, tremendous. That, and tough, talk about tough. We go up on the bus, like I say, you're going up at one hell of an incline, and you see these people riding a bicycle up there. You know, they got this thing in low, low, low gear, and they're pedaling. They do about 47 round-trip pedals to move forward 1 yard.
Yeah.
And you figure, Jesus, you know, you got a bus. Take the bus, buddy.
I guess it's an ego trip.
I guess.
I pedaled up to the eagle's nest.
Yeah, and lived to tell about it, and it only took me a week and a half.
Yeah.
And then coming back down, you see people actually walking down, like six, I don't know, umpty gazillion meters. Not me. Even when I was a tough guy,
doesn't make any sense. I agree.
Yeah. So then the next picture, you can see Koenigsee from up there on top of the Eagle's Nest. And we'll be on Koenigsee, which means the King's Lake. We'll be on Koenigsee in a day or two, and we got the photos from that. Magnificent place. And then the next one, if you look closely, you can see a rainbow.
Sure do. Yeah.
Yep. That's all from the top of the Eagle's Nest. Now, the next one where it says to the memorial, I shot that from the patio at the Eagle's Nest at Kelstein House. But up there in the clouds, there's a huge cross and a memorial. And of course, cross, you know, and we were told these people were all godless Nazis, which just wasn't true. But I decided not to go up there for a couple of reasons. It's quite a hike. I've been there. Plus, it was cold. Boy, was it cold. It was like 25 degrees. And we were getting hit in the face with little tiny BB-sized sleet or snow or whatever it was.
Yeah.
There have been times I've been on this mountain when you're in shirt sleeves and you're pouring sweat. I've been there when it's 3 inches of snow. You never know from 1 year to the next what it's going to be like.
Well, I see the cross up on top. Now, what's the memorial about?
That's a memorial to the soldiers who died in the war there. Because if you know where to look for them, there are the foundations for the 37-millimeter and the 20-millimeter anti-aircraft guns up
right,
there.
Right, right. So there was fighting that went on there when the Americans and the whatever, whoever overran the area, the Germans
really.
Resisted?
No, at the very end of the war, April of 45, Bomber Harris decided to attack the area, and they bombed Hitler's home, Goering's home, Bormann's home, etc., which is very close to, you know, it's on the next mountain over from this thing.
Right.
But they just, this is right on a precipice. Boy, but let me tell you, it's on a precipice. They couldn't get any bombs to land on the Eagle's Nest, and if it missed by just a little bit, the bombs slid down the mountain and blew up in the valley. So it stayed pretty much untouched. And as for combat, no. The mayor of Berchtesgaden declared it to be an open city. I mean, it was the end of April 1945 when the French came there first, and then the 101st Airborne U.S. had to come and replace, let's put it that way, replace the French. We've heard about all the horrors of Hellstorm when the Soviets came through
right.
from the east, killing men for fun and raping all the women.
Not human behavior.
The French did the same thing here, we learned.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Those vaunted French. I've heard also that the famed French resistance of the war was largely a crock of...
some hooey. But, you know, after the war's over, you can write it any way you like.
That's what they do. Yeah.
But, yeah, we're coming to other slides later that we'll talk about the the way the French were in this area.
And, not good. Not good.
No, it wasn't good. You know, when the war's over, the civilians on the losing side always pay a heavy price.
The Germans...
like animals, and the women are raped.
After that, from 1945 to 1953, nobody knows how many millions of Germans were killed. They were just murdered. They were genocided in groups. The Zionists went in there and killed all the remaining patriotic Germans, the hardcore patriots who survived the war. They were marked for death. They didn't want them to come back together and do anything. the Germans in the East under Soviet occupation didn't suffer like that. So that's why today the East part of Germany has the strongest resistance to the invasion that's going on there right now. That those Germans remember what it's like to be Germans. In the West, most of them were killed.
Yeah, just an unfortunate situation.
Beyond,
I guess it's a good reason to never lose a war.
Yeah, well, we fought the wrong enemy. A lot of American military men finally realized it. Certainly, General Patton, our greatest general, knew it before the war ended. He knew we were fighting the wrong enemy.
And even Churchill came out. Of course, he didn't say it quite so politely. He said, "We've slaughtered the wrong hog." You know, he meant they should have gone after the Soviet Union, but that was not the plan.
No, the bankers directed them. They didn't want them to go after the Soviets then.
Right, and if you remember, it was not Hitler who started World War II. It was the Polish, but that's another whole debate.
And then we got Barbarossa and how the Soviets were getting ready to overrun all of Europe to the English Channel.
Right.
And Hitler
exactly.
found out about it 3 weeks early and launched Barbarossa and saved Europe for 4 years.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to know that.
No. All right, next up, Mussolini's fireplace.
Right, those two shots, one is the overview and the other one is the interior of the fireplace. It's all red Italian marble that Il Duce sent as a present, because in German the word gift means poison. So it was Mussolini's present, Geschenk, to Hitler for this beautiful, beautiful building. And of course, Mussolini called Il Duce, which means the leader, the same as Der Führer in German means the leader. Oh, everybody had a nickname back then, I guess.
Yeah, okay, we're in the Eagle's Nest now.
Right.
And this is where the elevator goes up to, and you get out.
Right. And this is the main room, which is where Hitler used to entertain his guests up there.
Sleeping quarters now. This is like a destination resort.
Yeah, it's two stories high. We're not allowed to go into the lower part because the restaurant has taken it over for food storage, food preparation, etc. down there. And some of the other rooms up on this level are also off limits because they're using them for washing the dishes, etc. So when we first went there, all was open, and we on this particular tour, my group took the room that was the SS guard room where the SS bodyguard would have their meals, because they weren't allowed to mingle with the big guys. They could just guard the big guys, and then they had to go off into their own little room to eat. But now it's just a place to cha-ching the cash register.
Yeah, it's a money machine, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's too bad they didn't figure this out and preserve much more of what they could have. And think of the tourism.
Yeah, I've always said if they just put a turnstile up on the top of the, over Salzburg, where Hitler's home was, Goering's home, Bormann's home, et cetera, charged people
unreal
20, unreal. 30 euros to go in there.
Yeah.
They'd have paid off the national debt a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, there's another Harry Cooper photograph of food.
Food.
What is that?
Right.
What are we looking
braised,
at there?
Braised pork, and the yellow stuff is spätzle, the little tiny butter noodles, egg and butter noodles. Doggone tasty. And, of course, I picked out that cucumber. I didn't eat the cucumber. Terrible things. I just don't like cucumbers. But, yeah, and you see the little silver bowl in front of it? That's where all the sauce came from.
Uh-huh.
And the bottle off to the right, that's my Afri-Cola.
It's not black.
That from?
It's gray.
What, the bottle?
Oh, no, it's bottle. I see it. There it is. Yeah,
it's clear. Yeah.
Got it. It's a clear bottle. It's empty.
Yeah, I drank it.
Yeah.
I had to order a second one. Actually, the second time around, I had a hot chocolate. And it was cold up there.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they heat the place, but it damn cold outside. Mm-hmm. I'm from Florida. You get 25 mm-hmm. below or 25 degrees, and it's damn cold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right.
Not like I'm still living back in Chicago.
No more Chicago.
No more.
No
too
more
damn
Detroit
cold.
Either.
Yeah, it's all cold up there.
You know, it's all Muslim up there.
Okay, I haven't been back up north.
We had,
in
Frosty
many
was
years.
On last night. He went back to Detroit and he said it's amazing. There are mosques all over the place.
Yeah,
he said, there are areas
yeah.
you just don't go.
That's what I've been told. I don't know. Well,
all right, Camp House.
I'll stay in Florida.
Camp House.
Camp House. Right.
Yeah.
The Camp House. That. What the nickname more or less is, because after Hitler and Rudolf Hess got out of Landsberg prison, Hitler was continuing to write his book Mein Kampf, My Struggle, and I guess he finished it here in this little house. They rented this little cottage up on the Obersalzberg mountain, right close to the house that Hitler later owned, but this was just a little cottage. Excuse me. And because he finished Mein Kampf in this little house, it's referred to as the Kampf House. And what you're looking at there is four little memorial candles that somebody had put mm-hmm. there, where the foundation is all that's left. And the rain came and, of course, put out the candles.
Right.
So one of our guys, you'll see in the next slide, Carl.
Are those leaves all over?
Yeah, fallen leaves and also pebbles and rocks.
Right. I didn't think they were potato chips, so now I got it.
No, not potato chips, no.
Okay.
So Carl dutifully poured out the water, dried out the candles, and relit all four memorial candles.
Good job, Carl. Good
yeah,
job.
Yeah, Carl's a cool guy. Very quiet fellow. He's an Air Force veteran like myself, but mm-hmm. way later, he was in the Air Force. I served my 4 years before Carl was ever even born. So he was in the later Air Force.
All right.
And the next clip, there's two Air Force veterans, Cooper and Carl, standing, and that's the foundation of the Kampf House behind us.
I see. Very good. Who knocked it down? Do we know?
I think it just...
rotted away?
Through time. It was all wood and nobody took care of it. That's right. Just my assumption. I don't think it was knocked down, because if that was the case, they would have taken down the foundation as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oops, I just knocked over my camera. Oh, well.
Your point-and-shoot camera?
Yeah. It sits on my desk.
Timeless, priceless camera you've had for 15 years?
Yeah, it's taken almost all our pictures. It's been all around the world with me in about 30 or so countries.
Wow. I had a camera like that. It was a wonderful Panasonic, a Lumix, and small, like sounds about the size you described.
Right.
Point and shoot. Had a little tiny little zoom lens. Didn't have to mess
right.
with it. And I set it in the driveway, and somebody drove over it. So I found another one on eBay and bought it. Somebody actually had one, a used one, just like it. So 15 years old. I've replaced it. But they're too complicated now, these damn cameras. Who wants all that stuff?
I know. My daughter, who is a computer whiz, had to show me how to work the damn Nikon. I still don't know how to work it.
Yeah.
And when I almost died this past February down in the jungles of Argentina, and I was laying on the front deck of the park ranger's shack, and they
yeah.
kept pouring water over me for an hour, so I didn't go into heat stroke.
Was it that they long they poured the water on you?
Yeah,
no.
They forgot to take the Nikon off my neck. So my Nikon got water all over it, too. But it still functions, but mm-hmm. I can't figure a damn thing out. Too complicated.
Yeah. All right, well, there's another picture here. Jeannie with the light brown hair.
Yeah, Jeannie was cool. She actually, she got our book, mm-hmm. Hitler in Argentina, I guess, off Amazon. I don't know. But she read the book, and she read about our tours, and she came to our website, and she said, hey, I'm going with these guys. And she just loved it. She had a great time. Everybody on this group had a great time. We had a good group. No whiners, no crybabies. Everybody was just having a great time.
It takes a lot of moxie for a gal to do that. Just sign up for a trip and go. Very nice.
She didn't know anything about us other than what she saw on the website, and she just signed up. And I was supposed to meet her. I get to Germany a couple of days before everybody else. I was supposed to meet her at the airport and help her get to the hotel. I mean, it's real easy. You just get on the shuttle. They take you to the hotel. But since she had never traveled over here, I said, okay, I'll meet her. Well, I was at one terminal. She was at the other terminal. I figured, well, I don't know where she is. I went back to the hotel. There was a message there. It says, go back and get her. So I went back, and the bus pulled up. She's sitting there. She says, you must be Harry. And
that's
so
funny.
She had a great time. She's the one that taught us that when you're wearing the dirndl, the traditional dress, if the knot's on the left, you're available. If the knot's on the right, you're married.
What is that? It looks like a hand under her right arm.
Yeah, it looks like my right hand.
It does look...
Well, we can't have her fall off the mountain.
No, security first, always.
That's right. Hey, if I'm going to have my picture taken with a pretty girl, I'm going to have my arm around her.
You're damn right.
That's just the way nature is.
I hope.
Oh, God, I suppose when I run for president in 10 years... Somebody,
they're going to get you.
they're
going to get you.
Yeah.
All right.
Actually, I couldn't run for president anyhow because the Spitlickers have determined that I'm a Nazi, I am not, but... Anyhow.
I don't even know what a Nazi is, Harry. I really don't.
Well, actually, that was a term devised by somebody else. Oh. I think it was the Churchill government because the Germans...
Yeah, it was a bad PR thing they concocted so they could throw it at them.
Right, and because the Germans referred to themselves
not National
as
Socialists. They were Nazis. So, this was a Western concoction, I think. I've read that,
right,
too.
So, leave it to...
Everything German became Nazi... Never mind that only, one out of 10 people were even in the party.
And also it was Churchill who decided that German submarines should be called U-boats, which meant undersea boat, and all the rest of the submarines of the world be called submarines, because submarines is a nice connotation, whereas U-boat, that sounds evil. That was all a war of words. I remember as a kid growing up, we all knew Germans were horrible people. They killed people in the water for sport. They pray to Hitler because they hate God and all that. And it was all propaganda.
Yep.
They're very religious people.
It's the most Christian country in Europe, I'm told.
Well, I don't know about quantity.
No, that's what my guest last hour, Leonard Colwell, Dr. Colwell, born in Germany. He goes back. He was just back 6 weeks ago. He lives in North Carolina. A really remarkable guy, and he said it was without question the most Christian nation in Europe.
Yeah, every place you go, at little crossroads out in the country, there's always an altar or a shrine or whatever you call them, and people had them in their homes, on their property, and from Bavaria south through Austria, used to be really strongly maintained. Now it's not quite so strong, but when you see somebody, when you start talking, you always start with Grüß Gott, God's greetings. And back when we first started going down there, if you didn't start out with Grüß Gott, they wouldn't talk to you. I was looking for the bathroom 1990, the first time we were ever in Austria. One of our members needed a bathroom. We were in a tavern, and with my halting German, I said, "Bitte, wo ist Toiletten? Please, where's the toilet?" And the bartender put his hands on his hips and looked at me and said, "Ja, wo ist Grüß Gott?" Yeah, where's God's greeting?
Oh, really?
that's
interesting
formality. Grüß Gott, wo ist Toiletten?
That's funny.
Before we have a puddle on the floor here.
Yeah.
That was when Jimmy Klein was with us. Uncle Jimmy.
All right.
Anyhow. Yeah, that last picture you see, if you look closely, you can see the foundation. And I'm standing almost on the road, but you can't see it from the road unless you know it's there.
Right.
There's a lot of ruins in the area where this is, and we'll see them later on in this presentation.
All right.
Lots of ruins.
This presentation will now take a break, and we will come back with Admiral Cooper and continue on our picture tour. If you're just joining us, go to guests on the left-hand side and look for Harry Cooper. And look for photos under him and click on the photos, and we will pick it up from right here when we come back.